Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Thanks, past Todd. This is future Todd.
I mess that up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio podcast number 55. Most people can't drive it, but I think tonight we can, 55, if you know what I'm saying. Guys, on tonight's podcast, I'd just like to start out and say, hooray, America. So last time we were together, we didn't have a new president-elect, and this time we do. And I just want to give a little round of applause to America.
Doesn't it make you nervous, though, that now there's a guy who's not even the president, just the president-elect, but now when you read the headlines, you're concerned and worried that, you know, things will go awry. Almost like when you watch it, if you watch like a basketball game, yeah. When your team has the ball, you're a nervous wreck.
Hold it. How would you be, first of all, you don't like basketball, you don't have a team, and you've never been a nervous wreck during
basketball.
Okay. You've watched people become nervous watching basketball.
Back in high school, I was a big basketball fan, and that's right. The way I felt. Like, when my team was on defense, they had nothing to lose, everything to gain. You root for a block shot or a steal, but when they have the ball,
or a home
they're
run.
Supposed to score, and right. If they don't, it's a disappointment.
Yeah,
and
that's
the way I kind of feel right now with the headlines as I look at CNN or MSNBC.com, and they're starting to, like, scrutinize his choices for cabinet already. I'm like, right. Oh, no, everybody calm down. Everything's...
No, you can't stop the machine that is 24-hour news cycle political news. You can't stop that machine. You just hope they can, you know, just picking apart to bits will abate.
Well, yeah. For all of those stations and for all of the news media, good news is not news. So whenever something is getting a little bit positive, they have to talk about
sure.
The other side of it. Because that's what gets people coming back.
Russ, if it bleeds, it leads, as they used to say in the
news
biz.
That's
right,
okay.
Dad?
But well, I feel a little bit better now.
Yeah, I mean, right now, fine. I'm still in the blissful state of this is great. And I remember the morning after, I walked into work, and I didn't even know how to react because I didn't know how to be happy. I didn't know the feeling of happiness of winning this for our country, for the good of the common American person. Like, I didn't even know how to be. And it took me till that night when I got home. I was in a really good mood. I was, like, guarded. I was waiting for, you know, something horrible to happen.
You thought someone was playing a joke on you?
I really did, because...
An elaborate practical joke?
I loved all the responses of people. Friend of the show, Greg Hoy, had a great line. He just basically said, I felt like my identity was stolen for the last 8 years, and I finally got it back, and everything was just settled. You know, like, you got it back, you're who you are, and you're able to kind of live in America the way you think you're going to be able to.
I won't speak on behalf of the entire show, but I will say that Tuesday was not a resounding win, though, because what, in three states, that people voted to ban gay marriage?
Yes.
And that's the dark ages. Come on, that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel, but that's disheartening, and I can't understand how people could come out and vote against someone else's happiness, and... It's moronic, and it's sad.
I can't imagine anybody that you would be fraternizing with would feel otherwise.
Right.
That link that you sent, who was it?
Keith Olbermann.
What a great,
yeah, it was
great
awesome.
Segment that was.
Yeah, and you know, it does, to me, it's common sense. But you know what? Everyone needs an enemy. Especially organized religions. Many organized religions are based...
But can it be insects or...
No. It
can't,
has
can't
to be...
Fight, no. Inclement weather?
Skunks?
No.
Freaking skunks.
You have to have an enemy to keep your masses in fear, because as the great Noam Chomsky said, when your people are in fear, they're the most easily managed, and that leads to easily manipulated. So for a religion to become successful, you can't just be, everything's hunky-dory, everything's going along great. That would be the ideal of a religion, but no, you have to be like, hey, you know what? Our religion's always in peril, and it's imperiled by gay people. Is it really? No, that's ludicrous. It's insane, but you have to create enemies so you can manage your people.
Yeah, well, and not to get too heavy, but we were talking about the other day that religion, I think, sets its sights on same-sex marriage and contraception, because the number one way that they have new membership is being indoctrinated by the parents.
It's not open houses and like, hey, come on.
I don't think so. I don't know how effective they go in door to door.
You're right. You need new little ones. And I guess, you know, that's what maybe that's one of their main insane thoughts in their head when they propose this. But, you know, it's going to get overturned.
This is very political, our podcast so far.
I thought we were going to focus on the...
Let me get back to...
Used Wing Party.
That's right, we really are. No, I just wanted to say, and I have to ask you guys, when was the... Oh, I got that time. Let's play a song, and when we come back, we'll end the Usewigs politics section, and we'll get back to the nonsense we do so well. First song, let me look at our big song list, our giant ledger of songs. Oh, page blowing off the dust. We're up to page 642, and it says we're going to play a new one by Sea and Cake, and this is off their new album, Car Alarm, and it's the song Car Alarm.
Still don't know, why don't you? I don't do that. Time's refusing, it's haunting me. Rejection's fine. The river finds dementia to fall down just lazily. I never thought to mention I'm not lost yet. Ooh, let's see. We bring a stop on emergency.
And we're back, people. That was Car Alarm off the album Car Alarm by the band CN Cake. They've been around for a very long time, and they're a very good band.
Sounds like one of those like telephone recordings. You're listening to Car Alarm by off the album Car Alarm.
Where the inflection doesn't match the rest of the settings. CN Cake have one of my favorite David Bowie covers, and that's Sound and Vision.
If you'd like to hear Sound and Vision, press 1. Yeah, I was doing a little movie phone guy. I didn't know that. But yeah, if you want to check out C and Cake, just go to MySpace/CSEANCake. Great band. I think Archer Pruitt is the guy in there.
I am so disconnected now, and I've realized perhaps it's just the age or like being a father or what, but and maybe you can agree or you can relate to this. In the 80s especially, and through most of the 90s, I was kind of a pop culture junkie. You know, you knew what movies came out, you saw a lot of them. If you didn't, you caught them on DVD. You watched plenty of TV. And if you didn't watch the television program, you watched enough television programs about television that you knew everybody and everything. Entertainment Weekly, which I still subscribe to begrudgingly just to know what's going on or try.
Right.
They came out with, I think, their 25 or 30 most influential people in entertainment this year. I knew almost none of them.
Really?
And even after like reading the paragraph of why the person was an impact player, I couldn't figure out like what are they from? They won a Grammy. Why? I just felt like such an old man.
Yeah.
I need a young person to be like, what's that? Who's this guy? And what? And sometimes even like the guest host on Saturday Night Live, I have to be like, Heather, who is this person?
Okay. Now I thought this same thing, and there's two reasons for it. I've identified.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Any guesses?
I normally have an answer for everything, whether it's correct or not.
One is that every year that passes, the amount of media that is available to us increases exponentially.
Very true. Very true.
The amount of album, because putting out a mainstream album or an album that people in the mainstream could grab or, you know, or could pick up and that could be played on the radio was so much more expensive and so much harder 20 or 30 years ago that, you know, first of all, the scope of what was out there on all of the stations was like exponentially smaller.
So the sea of entertainment is vaster, you would say?
Absolutely,
first of all.
Right.
Okay.
And so much of that is because things are, you know, on demand, but all, you know, almost everything that's ever been put out there is available on a DVD. All like TV shows, movies, everything, it's all out there. And something that a guy records in his basement, if he puts it out there, you can come across it and it can become a hit. So it's a sea of media, number one. And then compounding that is that your time is limited and all of our time is limited, especially we have jobs and things like that. So we focus on the things that we like the most. And even the things that we like, there's more of it than we can ever get to.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus on the things that I like and try to absorb as much of that as possible. So, yeah, I'm not going to end up listening to Chingy's latest album because that's just never going to come across
my
plate. Whereas, you know, in the 80s and things like that,
sorry, Chingy,
you know, I was never a big Madonna fan, but I knew every word to every song because it was inescapable. And
good point.
And now it's not like that so much.
So you have a similar experience? I mean,
Big time.
Yeah, I realized probably 4 years ago I gave up on my curiosity and willingness to suck it all in. Because I remember, like, right then there was, like, the World Series of Pop Culture on VH1, and I remember someone's like, you should do that because you know all the pop culture. And I'm like, you know what? I don't anymore. And 4 years prior to that, I would have been really excited and I would have done really well. But I just, you get to a point, like, yeah, it's due to the oversaturation, and you just give up.
Maybe.
And it's
throwing the towel.
It's,
I don't know.
Self-preservation. Like, where are you going to put your energy? You can either be, and especially somebody like you, and like both of you guys, you know, like you want to be productive in your own way and create your own.
That's true.
Part of that as well. So if you could spend all of your free time easily just trying to keep up with everything that's out there, and you still would never do it. But you're also trying to carve out time to make your own mark and put your own things out there. It's just not possible, and it's almost freeing when you get to the point where you just live with it. You'd be like, look, I am who I am. I like the things that I like. Whatever I come across is great, but what I don't know isn't gonna hurt me.
But does that make us squares?
Bingo.
Squares. You talking L7? You talking L7, Todd?
I felt a little square looking at that list.
You know what? There's room for squares.
I guess so.
That's a John Mayer album title, first album. I just thought I'd quote that. That's for you, Gelman. No, I think, like, I remember last year, like, I stopped Entertainment Weekly just because it's horrendous, and I said, you know what, I need the time to put out, like, my line of doilies and potholders that I've been, like, you know, guys, I'm into, like, creating such things.
Was that time spent thinking of something to say or remembering the word for doilies? What was that filibuster for?
The filibuster was just I was trying to craft a joke, and then I just gave up. And when I always give up, I always fall back on doily or potholder.
Speaking of potholder, so now that I'm getting all wrapped up in Facebook, a lot of my friends and relatives are in this phase right now where they're posting
old
pictures.
Photo, which is very fun.
Which is awesome. And so I'm getting wrapped up in it, too, and I have a lot of old stuff scanned. So
don't stop, Russ. That's
anyway,
all I'm telling you.
So I started looking through for some pictures of my cousins and I when we were little, and I found this picture that I've been telling people about for a long time. I had this one aunt who used to knit things, but the only thing that she knew how to knit was a potholder.
Okay.
So when she made other things,
there
so like she made me a scarf that was basically six potholders knit together. So I can give you this picture, Jeff. You can
put it in. Definitely.
So basically, there's this picture of my cousin and I when I'm like 5 years old, and I could barely even wear it because I just have these giant potholders tied around my head and hanging down the front.
Everything is modular.
Everything, exactly.
Right, right.
Potholder modular.
So everything she made was yeah, modular pothole pieces.
And Russ kept it, and right now he divided up into 6 potholders if you go into his kitchen.
I wish I still had that thing.
Getting back to I just want to touch on it again. When the celebration and stuff. And, like, you know, we were touching Todd, obviously a huge, huge basketball fan. But did the Phillies winning, I just wanted to get the pulse of, I believe I read something, Russ, you said at one point you were trying to get into it and you watched the whole Philly game during the playoffs.
Well, I've never had an easy time watching baseball on TV. It's brutal.
It is.
So I started to watch one game. I said, this is the World Series. And I said, you know, at least we should sit and watch this. I kid you not, we watched half of one inning and both of us looked at each other and said, come on, we can't be watching this.
But
so we basically made a pact and said, we will watch the final game when it's possible that they could win the series. We'll watch that game.
Yeah.
Wasn't able to do it.
But the final game
was the night of our podcast.
And I drove home, parked the car at the end of the street, and went into the pub of Penn Valley.
Oh, nice.
To watch the last inning.
Oh, nice.
And I didn't watch the last inning, but I watched the people watching the last inning.
Was it
and
crazy?
The place was packed. They're all wearing their Phillies gear. And they were adults. They weren't even, like, college kids. These were people between 30 and 50. And all of them, and you could hear a pin drop in there, and they have their hands clasped in prayer, and they're saying things out loud like, we need this. The city needs this.
Now, listen.
Come on.
Right.
I mean, and they're shaking their head. It was almost spiritual, I had such a great time watching. And then, of course, when they won, the place erupts, and they're running outside and screaming and hollering, and just to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah. I lit my neighbor's car on fire. I did, because I just figured that it's a way of unity, and I could have lit my own, but no.
I was shocked, actually. I mean, we're not way out in the burbs here, but this is fairly out there. And we opened our windows, and it was mayhem. Even here, the fire department had the siren going as far as you could hear. You could hear the crowds out.
That's the beauty of it. And I got really wrapped up in it, because I always enjoyed baseball, and I turned into a Phillies fan about 8 years ago because, you know, I moved to the city. I ended up living here, blah, blah, blah. I love, and I say it all the time, when the city of Philadelphia is happy, I'm happy. And the only way the city of Philadelphia gets happy is one of their loser sports team finally wins something substantial. So it was a great day. The parade was awesome. I walked to the parade from my business, and just marching down Market Street, they just closed off everything from West Philly into Center City. And it was just this sea of people, and everybody was happy. It was still early, so people weren't drunk and rowdy yet. But it was just, it was fun. It was just fun to be a part of, like, you know, the end of World War II, where everybody's in the streets dancing and happy. That's what it was like for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually the hoopla around has subsided. But I just think it was a nice time for Philly. So, you know, you gotta enjoy it, guys. You gotta really get into baseball.
Believe.
You gotta now. I want you both. I think every week next year we're going to go to a baseball game together and podcast from a baseball game.
That sounds great.
I can't imagine.
One or two games per season is playing for me.
There you go. All right, you know what? Let's play a song.
This is a band called French Miami, and this is a song called Science Fiction. We'll be right back.
same mistakes. We'll make the same mistakes.
French Miami with Science Fiction.
Are they from Miami?
I do not know.
They seldomly are nowadays, though, when they're named after a geographic location, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so chances are better that they are not from Montreal. Or, I mean, speaking of Montreal.
What?
They're not from Miami, but speaking of Montreal.
I will pull a Sarah Palin and get back to you on that one.
Wow. Okay. Nice.
So, speaking of Montreal.
Yes.
You mentioned the parade. The evening of the parade, which also happened to be Halloween.
Yes, crazy day.
I hopped a train, which was, by the way, full of drunk people in Philadelphia Phillies gear.
Awesome.
I hopped the train into the city to check out the Of Montreal concert, and was lucky enough to sit down and chat with guitarist Brian Poole, also known as BP Helium.
Well, what do you know about that?
Are you familiar with Of Montreal?
Am I familiar with Of Montreal? They have one of the most addictive songs ever, Disconnect the Dots.
Yep.
That
was one of their hits.
It's a great song, and I honestly, once a week for the past 5 years, I always end up just going.
They write infectious pop melodies, for sure. And, you know, they're very well known for, in addition to their kind of electro pop catchy beats, they put on a heck of a show, excuse my language, but it's like. the lead singer, especially, is very theatrical and flamboyant.
Yeah, what's the lead singer's name?
That's Kevin Barnes, Russ.
Kevin Barnes, there you go.
And Kevin Barnes and the rest of the crew put on a heck of a show with maybe 8 different costume changes. That's similar to or has kind of a similar flavor to the Flaming Lips show. Not the budget of a Flaming Lips show, but all of the bells and whistles.
Where was the show?
In Philadelphia's worst music venue.
Oh, wait, don't tell me.
Electric Factory?
Oh, the Electric Factory. Yeah.
Love that you said not the same budget. It was a little... low rent their theatrics.
Well, yeah, it was kind of like a B movie version of a Flaming Lips show, but that you didn't sacrifice anything in that. You know, because he came out as a centaur, he came out in a coffin full of shaving cream. They are dressed as supermen. There are dancing Buddhas. There are dancing robots. I mean, it's a to-do.
Question: if it wasn't Halloween, would this all be the same?
That's their show, but the audience was also going nuts and in costume. And I'll have a story for you about that when we come back from the interview. But let me throw it over to previous Todd.
Thanks, future Todd. This is past Todd backstage at the Electric Factory. Moments before, I should say hours before, the Of Montreal show in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I have the distinct pleasure of sitting with Brian Poole, a.k.a. the late BP, member of Montreal. Thanks so much for chatting with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
And as we were just chatting about, also a member of Elf Power, and a lot of the bands on the Elephant Six Stable, I know many members, you along with Kevin Barnes, founding member of Montreal, lived communally together in at least a home, and we kind of, I imagine it to be very sensational and romantic, like Van Gogh and Gauguin living together and inspiring. What was that like?
Well, you know, I think we're just a bunch of kids that moved to Athens, Georgia, because for one, other people were there before that said, hey, come to Athens, it's really awesome. And I think, you know, all that the prehistory of us being there, you know, definitely owes something to the bands like REM and B-52s and Pylon and all these other bands you never heard of that kind of create a scene in Athens. And the South being very conservative, if you're a kid in a certain town, you know, you're like, what the hell am I going to do? I want to do this. And your friends are kind of like, well, yeah, but they don't really have the initiative or the drive that you do. I mean, you know, most smart kids from small towns leave and they go to the big town. But we went to Athens because we wanted to play music. And that in the South, you know, there was a couple places. Maybe it could have been Chapel Hill, which kind of had a good scene going for a little bit, or some other places. But fortunately, we all came together in Athens and were like-minded, found each other. It took a while to find all the people, you know.
But that became kind of a safe haven in, rooted in the South for the artistic development and nurturing.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, you know, I like to think that because of our scene that we created back in the mid-90s to late 90s, you know, we influenced other kids to come to Athens to try to do their own thing. I mean, they're not, you know, just Elephant Six rip-off bands are doing their own thing, but there's always like a new crop of kids that come and they're adding fresh blood and excitement and verve to what's going on. And that's kind of what a scene needs to kind of keep thriving and turning over. And there's always kind of dead, stale spats or whatever like that, but Athens got a great scene.
And you guys are really breaking into the spotlight, getting a tremendous amount of press for Skeleton Lamping, the new album. And so people who have heard of Montreal and tuned into the show, what bands haven't they heard of that you would suggest they check out?
From Athens or just any?
Well, Athens is a good place to start, sure.
I know the Athens scene better, and there's another band I play with called Dark Meat, which is totally different from of Montreal. It's more like Dark Meat's influenced by the Stooges and Albert Eiler and a bunch of other freaky bands that just kind of have that raw energy, but kind of a, you know, like kind of a loony bin theatrical element to them as well. And it's a big band. It's like 15 to 20 members, and it's the closest thing that I could think of to playing like with Sun Ra or something like that, who's a minor to major influence on me. At least I like to think that, you know.
That's great.
So there's bands like Dark Meat. There's girl named Madeline who's more like a singer-songwriter, but she's got a beautiful voice. She writes great songs. There's kind of like a weird, diverse amount of people there. So you have like country bands, you've got hip-hop acts, you've got a bunch of other things. And basically, I go to this place called The Secret Squirrel, which is run by my friend Mercer, and he's kind of like the Bengali of Athens, putting on shows and like making things happen. And Secret Squirrel is not even like an official club; it's just like this basement hole, which any good scene needs. You know, like you got your clubs, and it's cool to have good clubs to go see bands. But I think the house party feel is where you really get that interaction and you communicate with other people. You know, if I go to a show, I'm not necessarily going to go up and just say, hey, how's it going? You look interesting. Maybe. But at a party, well, we got to go to the keg and get a beer, and you're holding the tap for the other guy or girl, and he's like, oh, what are you doing? And I think that's really gets, as far as like artists communicating, that's a really helpful element.
And so it sounds like the two bands that you're currently working with both have a very theatrical component. Talk to me a little bit about the importance of the visual. I mean, I thought a really interesting quote in the recent Paste article was, if you want to just listen to the music, you can hear the album, you know, and said, you guys obviously attack multiple senses in your shows, at least in the Of Montreal shows, I'm sure. Yeah. How important is that to you, and how does that process kind of materialize and take form?
Well, it's just kind of built on itself, and Kevin writes all the songs, so like where he's coming from, sometimes, well, always, you know, the material will dictate certain things. But like, he's always wanted to throw everything in the kitchen sink at what he's doing. You know, he doesn't like to sit in one spot. He likes to keep it for himself interesting and moving. And by the third record, we were starting to do theatrical things on stage. I think that was just a natural progression for
and
the band.
Does he come into like a band meeting and pitch some kind of outlandish thing where you all kind of begrudging, like, we have to wear what suits made of bananas, or we're supposed to be on fire this time? Or
I'm not saying there hasn't been those times where you're like, are you crazy?
Right.
You know, I mean, this whole tour that we're doing now is, gobs and gobs of money to be spent on this. You know, and at first, you know, like, we're just like, oh, man, are we... I view it as like these prog rock bands from the 70s that, you know, want to do these ambitious shows. And, you know, it's great, you know, but we know that, like, what we're doing for this tour is something that we might not be able to do for every tour. We're actually even talking about scaling back for the next tour to do something a bit more.
That's a matter of money or complication of setting up?
All the different factors involved. I mean, because... For one, this is a huge, it becomes like a huge machine. It's like a mechanism that you have to get all the pieces in place. And we had, you know, production meetings for this tour, you know, 6 months ago, longer than that, you know, trying to figure out what we're going to do. And Kevin's premise for the tour was like nothing was out of question. You know, if you wanted to fly like a condor and slurp up some, you know, porridge goo blood and spit it into his mouth as I was flying over, you know, like he would be like, okay, let's try it. Let's see how we can do that, you know. So we got some of those things implemented. Some things were too cost prohibitive or just like there's no way, you know, the club needs some sort of like total rafter type thing scaling. You know, have to hire special people like harnesses right. and like stuff. I mean, if a bigger bands do it,
yeah,
they, I mean, sure, you know.
Because they'll build the scaffolding if they have to.
Yeah. But we're not quite there yet, hopefully. Maybe we have a benefactor who wants to supply us with $1 million for a tour. You know, we can do some more outlandish things. But
wait, on stage, has there ever been something where either that came from Kevin or was a collection of the bandmates or even from yourself that you thought maybe this will fly, and then when you got up there, it fell apart or wasn't received properly?
Well, I think you're always tinkering with it. You're always trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And, you know, that's just a natural process. Anybody that does that, that's, you know, you're going to make adjustments on the fly and stuff. There was a tour that I was involved with, but Kevin, his wife Nina, and his brother David did a few years back, and they called themselves Apollinaire Rave. Should maybe pronounced Apollinaire. Apollinaire. Was a surrealist writer from the turn of the century. Kevin had been reading at the time. He just decided he'd come off an Of Montreal tour, and he had our booking agent book a tour for him that was initially supposed to be him like maybe playing solo acoustic or something. And he decided he didn't want to do that.
Right.
And then it was like they had 3 days to come up with a concept. He had a few songs that he had demoed on his 8-track digital recorder, just like a small crappy thing. And then him and his new wife and his brother went off and did this kind of created, you know, surreal, you know, Greek tragedy, you know, that had nothing to do with Greek mythology. Just kind of created whatever, you know, there was alien births and like,
of course,
stuff like that happening. But when they first started off, you know, they said that they had no clue what they're doing. And they're like in the van trying to brainstorm, and they're stopping at like dollar stores trying to buy stuff. And our booking agent said he saw one of the first gigs and he said it was horrendous. And like, it just like didn't make any sense and didn't work. But they kept at it, and they would every day be like, well, that really failed. That really didn't work. And then they thought of something else. By the time they got back to Athens, when I finally saw the show, it was one of the best things I'd ever seen.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, blew my mind.
That's a really inspiring story.
And they had the guts to do it because really, it was gutsy. Because it was more just Dada performance art than it was. They weren't like playing music. There was just, he had played the backing tracks and he might sing to them. But other than that, it was just like free for all of weirdness.
But that's very courageous. And I think certainly so. That's how something good happens, is to be at peace with the fact that something could crash and burn and fail. I mean, how many destroyed or broken down planes were on the way for the Wright brothers? How many did they crash into the side of a hill?
There's all the footage of those guys trying to be inventors and dying, a lot of them. I mean,
right. Well, that's great.
Yeah, you have to be willing to fail. You're not going to succeed unless you fail, and you will fail.
And there are plenty of bands out there playing it safe. Unfortunately, or for however you want to paint that, but, you know, and so to be a part of a group of people that are willing to take risks must be really exciting.
Yeah, for some reason this image pops into my mind. It's not like I'm the hugest Genesis fan or Peter Gabriel fan, but there's a thing where Genesis started off as this one kind of band. They looked kind of normal. And then one day, unbeknownst to the band, Peter Gabriel cuts all his hair off in this weird fashion, comes out on stage, and they're just looking at him like, what in the hell has happened? What has he done? And then they did like a press conference afterwards, and the rest of the band, there's shots of like Peter Gabriel talking, the rest of the band is just looking at him on the couch, and they just look like regular dudes from, you know, England with big sideburns that kind of look like me or something. But, you know, they're just looking at him like, he's a freak. They're, like, totally in shock.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that something needed to happen for that band. They were playing it too safe. And then they became, like, this crazy theatrical band. Check out some
It became a spectacle, yeah.
Check out some of that early Genesis stuff with Peter Gabriel.
Which I think his background is in mimery, which I think
Just like Bowie?
I believe that was Peter Gabriel's, I think, that was some of his training, so that's
when... Bowie, of course, he was a mime, you know, if you see some of those promo shots of him, it's like a mime thing, which I think there's like the faux rockumentaries and stuff like that, I think there probably was like a Spinal Tap thing. Well, there was this, the mime, like, servers at their album release party or something.
Yep, yep. So, and on top of all of the spectacle that is of Montreal and the show that, you know, like we're talking about, has so much attacking the visual senses as well as the audio, we are in Philadelphia on an evening that is very special, both Halloween and the eve of our big Philadelphia Phillies parade, which I think will have a combination of drunken rowdiness that could be unparalleled here in the city, since most people started maybe partying at 2 o'clock today. How does that change, or what does that make you feel like as a performer coming to a city like that?
Well, not to say what I'm not. This is true. We always have great shows in Philly, and I love playing Philly. And Philly has this, you know, it's one of the coolest cities in the States, basically because of the combination of all the ethnic groups that have moved here and settled. That makes it a really rich kind of cultural experience. Playing on Halloween is always a freak show. We're the freaky band. We get to play on Halloween. It better be good, you know. The Phillies winning. We're actually sports fans. Kevin's an Indians fan, and I don't know who I root for. I guess the Braves, but yeah, you know, I was rooting for the Phillies to win over the Rays. As much as the Rays were like some sort of like Cinderella story, they didn't deserve to win. They've been a franchise for like 9 years. People don't even go to their games. I mean, come on, you know. So. Yeah, you know, the Phillies winning, that's cool. And it's pretty weird to come into the day, yeah, when the parade's happening.
Yeah, this is definitely the place to be and the night to be here. So thrilled about the show, looking forward to seeing you guys, and thanks so much again for your time.
Yeah, it's fun.
Play with you.
And that was Id Engager from their new album Skeletal Lamping by Of Montreal. And that's probably the single, the catchier single off that album. But the whole album through and through is one of their best ever. So I would definitely recommend checking it out. And I promised a story. I was dressed during the day, as you saw the photographs, I was an Oompa Loompa by day at school. But I didn't want to have all the makeup on and all that for the interview and for the show. So I went back to the old standby, the God costume,
right,
which was a giant white beard, white wig, and just big white cloak. And I got there early enough to do the interview that I had a great seat looking over the balcony upstairs. And we're sitting there for an hour waiting for the show, and there is a sea of people on the floor, mostly younger people, I guess, because they didn't get up to the drinking part, but maybe 150, 200 people. And at one point, I noticed a couple separate pockets of people like looking up at me and pointing because of the God costume,
right,
I assume. And so I just decided to stand up and stretch my arms out, and don't you know, almost the entire floor looked up and began to like scream and holler and applaud and chant. And I stood there for about a minute.
Asshole.
And it was
what were they chanting?
It was a combo. No. Like they were enthusiastic about,
yes,
God.
This,
you
was
know?
During the show?
This was before the show.
Oh,
so it was just a sea of people waiting for the show. I stood up, stretched my arms out, stood there for about a minute to like cheers and hollering, and it was invigorating. It was so strange to have that much attention, you know, because we perform live, but never in front of like that kind of crowd. And I wouldn't call it a performance, but it also felt weird, like on God's dime, to solicit that much attention and positive energy, you know.
Dude,
so
God's gonna be a little pissed. You stole
and,
a little
and
bit
Heather
of
the whole time's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Sit down. What is this? What are they doing?" It was crazy. It was really.
Was Heather dressed up?
She was a criminal, you know, like with a kind of black and white striped outfit.
Ah, that's cute.
Yeah.
She was Sexy Mustard.
That's the best. How great is that video?
Sexy Lobster.
That is one of the funniest YouTube videos ever.
I have to put a link to that, too.
Oh, it's so good.
There were a lot of really cool costumes, though. There was Hedwig and the girl guy that Hedwig dates in the band. There were a whole troop of garden gnomes with just big, tall, pointy red hats and the white beards. There were all the Blade Runner replicants.
Wow,
including
nice.
Chris, the pleasure model. So there were a lot of cool costumes.
And the show was very good.
Stellar.
Really?
One of the best shows I've seen in a long time, except for the sound, Electric Factory.
Yeah. Pretty bad, right?
Yeah, and beer selection.
Oh, I like a big plastic cup of Bud Light.
Oh,
like 60% foam just sitting there. And you're
I
like,
wish they would close that venue down so that awesome
right,
bands
right.
don't go there.
There are a few venues where the sound is good, though. I mean,
where's the best, Russ? You you play around, you
well,
see a lot of shows.
I think that some of the smaller venues is where it sounds the best. What, you know, one of the best sounding venues in the city is The Fire.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not it's kind of off the beaten track. And actually, Johnny Brenda's has good sound, too. But you know, places like the Troc, I mean, the sound is always muddy there, and yeah, even when larger bands come through the Man, they just that's such a weird venue that everything's always real bassy. And
yeah, I know what you're saying, guys. All right, guys, let's play a song. Let's see what we got up next. This one looks like Todd, one of yours. I think it's a Tim Fight song.
Yeah, Tim Fight, this is his day. This comes from his Day Trotter session.
Oh.
And this is a little song called Away from the Snakes. Listeners, pay careful attention to the words of the song. I think it's really kind of moving.
It's about the words, man. It's about the words.
Shit on by rich.
Tim Fight.
Now, spell fight.
F-I-T-E.
Right, not an actual, like, altercation.
Right. Right.
Where is he from, Todd?
That comes from the Daytrotter session. Daytrotter.com. Where does he hail from? I do not know.
He hails from the center of the earth. Really, he's one of the...
he's one of the mole men that fought Fantastic Four.
Yeah, he burrowed up from the center of the earth and blessed us with his strange Middle Earth musical sounds. And fantastic. Guys, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Not really so much a question, but Todd, when we were hanging out and talking during brunch, you were brought up a very interesting topic. You always like to talk about the right brain and the left brain and the little brain. And
well, that's what I was talking to Kelly about. Was it's based on a book that I'm reading, and they make a very compelling case. The book is called A Whole New Mind, and it's how right-brainers will kind of inherit the or be more prized in the workforce of the future, the very near future. And basically, because of automation and outsourcing and abundance, the people who have very high-paying and prized positions of yesterday and maybe even left over current day, like doctors and lawyers and accountants, their job was to think very quickly like a computer. And now they're being replaced literally by computers. And if not, people that think that way and can do kind of a very can process very quickly can be hired and work remotely overseas. So the American who is good at that type of stuff or kind of comes through school learning that, refining those skills, isn't as necessary or certainly not as prized. So in the future we'll have people who are more interested in or at least better at design or storytelling, putting things in context and using the right side of the brain, which might be traditionally more creative, or think concretely about visual spatial relationships and musical relationships and creating things and making things, thinking outside the box. That's a whole new mind.
What I got from that is robot lawyers. Because I didn't say, wouldn't you love to just like march into the courthouse and be like, all right, Mr. Lyons, this is your third DUI and... who's representing you? And then the door just clangs open. It's like, and it's like Tobor, you know. And he's like, and he's just like, Mr. Lyons is sorry for his indiscretion. And you know, then he just spits out all the law stuff because you know you don't need a lawyer anymore because a robot could really learn all of that law talk and stuff.
You'll have to also now post the video to Tobor. It's got to be somewhere on MySpace at the very end.
I know. I love how they just had no faith in the common man to be able to figure that out.
You know, speaking of robots like that, Todd, I just last week watched THX 1138 for the first time, which I had never seen before. The Robot Policeman.
Yeah. Did you like it?
It was okay, right?
This is Lucas's first movie.
Yeah. It was very similar to Logan's Run, I thought. And the Logan's Run movie, I think, was like 6 or 7 years later, but I think the Logan's Run book was quite a bit earlier. But
like Michael
very,
York.
Very similar, I thought.
Great movie, Logan's Run. Great movie.
Yeah, actually, they have been talking about remaking that for a long
time. Don't!
Apparently that is underway now.
What? Jeez Louise, I know I gripe about it all the time, and we talk about it all the time, but is there such a complete dearth of creativity? I was looking through, I love to go to Apple Trailers and just look at the latest movie trailers while I eat lunch. Pop it open, I watch a trailer, and sometimes I just write a review based on the trailer. So I look at like the new movies come out. There's not another Friday the 13th, but they are redoing the original Friday the 13th. Ooh. Why?
What?
Just because they want to.
Yeah, you know, I thought that Saw 5 was supposed to be the last one, and apparently now there's some contest so you can be in
Saw 6.
Yeah, so Scream Queens, that show.
I mean, what?
It's well,
and Pink Panther 2 with that, Steve Martin
that,
again?
Steve Martin really could not do anything more right now to just swim in the toilet. I mean, it's just so... He really gave up caring and trying and just completely started cashing in. I don't know when, maybe Sergeant Bilko. I think maybe that was the movie or whatever. And then he just went like cheaper by the dozen. And then he just... Like, there's no coming back.
What was the last good Steve Martin role, would you say?
Wow. I would go back to... Well, you know what, like...
Roxanne, Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride, Blue, if you're into that.
But crap. But that's what I was going to say. As ridiculously terrible as Cheaper by the Dozen is,
yeah.
slash was, you know, because you see it on TBS every once in a while when you're flicking through.
Right.
People liked that
movie.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
And that is a sad state of affairs.
I know. But I'm saying it's just... There's got to be so many great ideas out there, but... The studios, the producers, they don't have faith that people will embrace anything new and enjoy something they already don't enjoy. So, I don't know why I brought that up again, but I think, what did you say? Oh, they're going to redo Logan's Run. Don't redo Logan's Run. Just watch it again, people. Promote it again. Put it on DVD. Have a director's cut and have like the actor, like Michael York, who was in it, talk about how great it was to make Logan's Run.
I had a big crush on
Michael York.
Jenny Agutter, I think.
Was that her name? Was she the one
yeah.
in that?
Yeah. She. What's that?
She was in that movie.
She was the female lead.
Don't you love, like, when you think back to old movies and the girls, like, growing up where you got your first, like, wow, I really like girls.
Do you remember who the first person was?
There were a lot of them, like...
Erin Gray was...
Well, I'm older, so, you know, I think...
Like Angela Lansbury?
Yeah, when she was young.
Angela
like,
Lansbury.
I'm older. Yeah, like Faye Ray was very big with me. I really enjoyed Gina Lola Brigida. You know, things like that. They were really... No, but, you know, when you watch those, like, like, 70s movies and TV shows, like, when the original, this is one of the worst movies ever, but it's so bad, it kind of crossed over into, it's completely enjoyable to watch, is Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club.
Oh, you had a crush on Penny Lane?
Oh, how could you not?
Yeah.
There was just something, and they made her magical. But she was so... I saw it in the theater 3 times.
That was the first time I ever encountered mortality or death, is when she died in that movie. I remember how... Like, that was
yeah.
pretty... That was pretty heavy.
But you know what the best part was? They let her be dead for a minute until the Bee Gees brought her back to life.
I think she was dead for about a song and a half.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You're right. And then they went to half a song, and then like the Bee Gees like zapped her, and she was alive again. Because
Anne Gillian was my first crush.
Oh,
from It's a Living.
It's a Living.
She played like a ghost. In a terrible 80s sitcom. I think I like that straight, shiny hair because I also liked Archie Bunker's niece.
Danielle Brisois?
Yeah, isn't she in a band now?
She was, yeah. She actually sang. Oh, you know what she was in? She sang in that band, The New Bohemians. Like, they had that song that sounded like... Damn, you know that...
The New Radicals?
The New Radicals, yeah.
Wait. Archie Bunker's niece?
Yeah.
No. Granddaughter?
It was his niece. No.
In Archie's Place?
In Archie's Place, yeah. She was Danielle Brisois.
Oh, Archie's Place.
She, like, brown, shiny hair.
Show.
Yeah.
Okay.
She looked like Nicholas from 8 is Enough, but more feminine.
I remember really liking...
Only slightly.
What was the show with
the TV's
twins?
Adam Rich?
Remember those... There were two twins.
Oh, the redheads?
No, the Landrys.
Double Trouble? Was that the name?
Yeah, they had red hair, right?
It was, like, brownish, reddish, and they had, like, pin straight hair like that.
Yep.
I remember really liking
They were
that.
Adorable.
Yeah.
What about the... Oh, yeah. Weren't they the Doubleman twins, though? The
I
same
think
girls?
They were.
Yeah,
yep,
they were the same girl.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where that came from.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. What do you know about that, huh?
One always wore a cardigan sweater.
Anyway, what do we got? We got one more song, which is going to be fantastic, and then we're going to end up with the end of the show wrap-up. But before we do, I'd like to play a song by one of my most favorite guys, John Snodgrass, most recently in Drag the River, and before that, Armchair Martian. Don't let this silly name fool you. Armchair Martian was one of the best bands this past decade. Just some good alt country. And this is his song. Geez, let me see what he's playing here. I believe. Oh, this is Fast and Last.
Don't bother me anymore.
That was John Snodgrass. Not the most mellifluous name, Snodgrass. And Russ, when I said the name John Snodgrass, you looked at me like you got a stink up your nose. Guys, we're near the end of the show, where we like to wrap it up with all our favorite stuff. Guys, believe it or not, I have one of our popular little things. This is I Don't Like You, and I Don't Need to Give a Reason Why. Kanye West. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
I like this.
I think if you you read up on his latest, you will agree with me that you won't like him and you won't need a reason why. Guys, you've been watching the YouTube lately?
Of course.
A little bit.
Todd, what are you watching on YouTube?
Type in Obama Doodles.
Obama Doodles.
There's actually a little segment looking at Sarah Palin and Barack Obama's doodles. They actually sold them at auction.
Of course they did.
And Sarah Palin is looks like basically a 12-year-old girl. It's just
princesses
fancy,
and
unicorns and clouds. No, just kind of fancy writing and like little phrases here and there written askew. So it would barely be considered a doodle if you ask me.
Right.
Writing. But Barack Obama actually has some skill.
There's nothing doodles. He can't do well.
He's a Superman. They're doodles of people, side view, front view. I guess people that perhaps
I'm looking at him. Yeah.
And they're not bad. He's fairly untrained, and they're not very refined.
Jeez, but Todd, it's our next president. Go easy.
When did he do those in meetings? Or
yeah, I think in meetings. So check it out. And he actually, I mean, they're equal to or better than Jonathan Winston Lennon's drawings.
Wow.
And he actually went to art school. Yeah, pretty good. Strong stuff. Solid.
Okay.
Obama Doodles.
Obama
actually.
Doodles.
What are you watching on YouTube?
You know what I am? This kind of got me on that tangent of how dare they remake, but they're remaking one of my favorite movies as a kid, Return to Witch Mountain, Escape from Witch Mountain. The original was Escape to Witch Mountain, and the follow-up was Return to Witch Mountain.
That's brother and sister.
Yeah, little Ike Eisenman or whatever, and the little girl is so cute.
She was cute, too.
She was. And it's just a great movie. Disney made it, and it had a real edge to it, and it was actually kind of like frightful and scary for a little kid movie. And it was really, really well done. And, of course, they're remaking it now with these two little, you know, toe-headed kids and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So, you don't really need to remake it. But then, of course, I was on YouTube, and the best part about YouTube is, I'm like, let me go check a little bit about Witch Mountain. Some nerd out there has put the whole movie online and divided it up into, like,
nine segments.
Yeah, it's like six segments. You can watch all of Witch Mountain. I watched four segments at lunch the other day, and it's great. I mean, it really holds
up. Does
it
hold up?
It does. It's
and you don't feel like it needs more ex-professional wrestler in it?
It could have used John Cena. But no, The Rock is fine. It needs an updating with The Rock. And I also, there's a great, one of my favorites. Growing up, I used to watch the 4:30 movie, which just had great monsters. They had Monster Movie Week. They had War Week. And Monster Movie Week would be great. And they just play like the cheesiest, crappiest monster movies. And there's one simply called Gargoyles. And it's about these gargoyles who live in this desert. And
Desert. There's these gargoyles.
There's these gargoyles in the desert. And these gargoyles in the desert. No, all I'm going to say is watch it. And it scared the crap out of me when I was young. And then as I watch it now, it's not as scary, but it's not as bad as I remember. Like, it's not as cheesy and stuff like that. And there's some very frightening scenes. And it's another one of those where someone is uploaded, like, the whole movie in chunks. So if you want to,
I knew the names of the monster movies that I watched, like in those time frames when I was a kid. There was one where there was some kind of a alien or something that had this, and he would shoot beams at guys. And I remember, like, there was army guys running at him, and when they got hit with the beams, they just turned into skeletons.
Sure,
all in black and white. I wish I knew the names.
Or they could have just been Russ's nightmares. Sure, they were movies, Russ. Why not?
Okay,
Russ, what was your what have you been watching on YouTube, there, kid?
There is a series on YouTube by Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah.
Where she does these movies called Green Pornos.
Ooh.
They are...
I hope she's not in it.
She is in them. They are the weirdest videos. They're basically like these performance art videos where she talks about the sex lives of different bugs.
Hmm.
And she acts them out. And they are so weird and creepy. very worth watching because they're just
creep
incredibly
fest.
Strange.
Yeah. That's good.
There's a whole series of them. There's like five or six of them.
So we ready for shout-outs?
Hip, hip, hooray! Hooray!
We certainly are, Todd. You seem excited about shout-out stuff. Why don't you go first?
Well, following in a rich tradition of talking about books that came out 50 years ago, but this one has a twist.
You guys into the Gutenberg Bible? Really good.
I picked up a used copy. I'm really enjoying going to used bookstores and buying books for $2 or $3 because there are plenty of books out there that I need to read that I don't need to spend full sure. price for a new book anyway. So I'm reading Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World. Have you guys ever read it? It's a really good book, right? So, and I would recommend the book on its own merit. But here's what I love about this book is it's heavily notated by
a fourth grader
seems
or something.
To be a female college student.
Sweet.
And it's and when I say notated, I don't mean just like highlighted or underlined, but reactions to passages and things circled and then like questions asked, you know, kind of rhetorical questions like, do they think this? Or, you know, it's like a zoo for people, you know, and just kind of these comments and read and you can't help and you can't help but read these comments as you come across them. And for me, I'm reading the book and these things are transpiring in the book to me real time. And she's commenting on them almost like going to the movie with a friend or at least an acquaintance who is occasionally making comments about what they're seeing. So it's really a very bizarre experience. It's the difference between watching a television show or movie by yourself or suddenly watching it in the company of a chatty friend or person sitting near you. And I find that I really like it. It's almost kind of a social... And, you know, this could have been written 15, 20 years ago. I mean, these notes could be really old.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm sitting with this, you know, kind of almost in the moment with this maybe 18, 19, 20-year-old girl, and we're reading the book together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I love her. No, but it's pretty interesting. So I would say
I made up her whole backstory. Her name is Tina. She grew
if you ever have the opportunity to like pick up a book that has lots of notes in it, it actually is it's added to the experience.
I like that. That's
very nice.
Yeah, very nice. Ross,
I'm going to shout out that link that we've all been sending around lately for the what is it? The Swedish dance bands of the 70s.
Sure.
There's been a lot of those actually, but
they've been around forever.
But I haven't seen this one before. This is a nice collection. There's a lot of new big.
Almost makes me wonder if there's somebody just recreating these because there just seems more and more come out every day. And you know these things have been around for like 5-6 years.
Yeah, I mean,
we used to have on Newswigs the whole. You know, I used to post the site. There were two sites that had them all, and then this new one that came out.
And it's all new pictures,
it's all new
right?
ones, yeah. So I don't know. They're great. Don't get me wrong. They're fantastic.
Great, so, and if they're real, so much the better.
Jeff, what do you got?
There's a couple of things. I just remembered one that I love. First off, you know, there's a few shows where you're like, this show's always funny, but I never remember to watch it. And then when you watch, you're like, God damn, that's fun. The latest South Park, where they just did their version of High School Musical, like the four main kids just can't believe that people... Like all the cool kids and all the girls are in love with all the cool kids and they're all just in musicals. They're like, what the hell's going on? You know, they're like, this is lame. What's going on? So it's their take on High School Musical and it's great. It's really funny. And like Reno 911's another one of those shows where you watch it and you laugh the whole time. Like, this is great, but I never remember like to watch it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to from now on remember to watch those two shows because I'm amazed how good South Park is still. It's amazing how good it is.
Did either of you guys see the Reno 911 movie?
Yeah.
Was that any good?
It's not as bad. You know, I interviewed Joe Latrullio, who was in it, and, you know, it was all the state guys, you know, all made cameos like he did and stuff like that. And I remember, like, I'm going to love it, I'm going to love it, I'm going to love it. Then when it came out, it didn't get good reviews. Mm-hmm. No one saw it, so I was a bit like, eh, this isn't going to be good. But then I watched it. If you like Reno 911, it's really good.
Yeah,
it's the same amount of laughs. It's very funny.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Dingle in the shorts, you can't lose watching him, you know.
But watching any kind of anything that you watch for 25 minutes compared to an hour and a half or 2 hours, it's like being at Hickory Farms and tasting the cheese and cracker sample and then mm-hmm. buying it and taking it home, making yourself sick after the eighth one.
That's,
you know,
a good,
it's like,
point.
It's good in a small amount.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice if they get The State out on DVD at some point.
It would be fantastic.
It's really kind of sad that show is sitting in a vault somewhere because it was so fun.
Oh, it's one of the best. And there's a book. They put out a book, The State by State, it's called.
Right.
It's just them traveling through states and giving their opinion on cities and states. Very, very funny. You can still get it in a bookstore. Hmm. But another thing I like to shout out, Current TV is a pretty good channel where they have little pods, little mini videos. And I learned about this very, very funny thing called Drunk History. Do you guys know what Drunk History is? Started out these two like kind of comedy writers in L.A. or just sitting around, and one of their dumb drunk friends was telling them a story based on history, and the guy was so into it, and he was like telling this history of this, and you're like, you know what, you're first of all, you're drunk, second of all, you're wrong, but it is very entertaining. So they have drunk people, their friends and people who know stuff, they record them drunk, and then they film what they're saying going on. Like, whether it's John Adams, an historical thing, or like Ike Turner. Like, I forget who it was. Otis Redding. One guy was talking about Otis Redding. And right before, do you know, right before Otis Redding died, he grabbed his wife and he said, I love you, baby, forever and ever, no matter what happens. I love you, baby. And, like, you know it didn't happen. But the guy who's telling the story is so drunk, and he's such a big fan, he's convinced this is the truth. So they film things called Drunk History. And they're like it's drunk guys talking about what they honestly believe with 100% of their heart is true history. And then they film it. And they get Jack Black's in it. Michael Cera does it. So it's really, really funny. I watched two of them, and they're quite good. Very nice. All right, people. That was podcast 55. Yay, America, everybody. Yay, America. Come on. Give it up for America. PA. Blue states. All states. Not the insurance company. I mean, all states coming together, living as one. He is, really.
He's boycotting the
clapping sounds on the podcast.
I just thought he's one of those conservatives.
Well, then you wouldn't put a clapping sound effect.
Sure.
What's the sound of one hand clapping?